leave of absence or even termination. Could that soon be the reality for some workers who refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine? The possibility of stricter measures being considered in select sectors. Good evening. Those are the rules being floated by one of the province's largest health networks, where nearly 1,000 employees remain unvaccinated.
And tonight, even some politicians find themselves with an ultimatum. Get a dose or face consequences. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Yeah, Nathan, here at Queen's Park, there are two progressive conservative MPPs who have yet to receive their COVID-19 vaccine. And now Premier Doug Ford has given them an ultimatum. Either get the vaccine or get out of the party. That policy seems to be very similar at what's happening with the University Health Network. They're telling 950 employees to get the vaccine or they could face termination. At the University Health Network in downtown Toronto, remaining unvaccinated will come with a cost.
We have to insist that people actually participate in a vaccine program or think about taking a leave of absence.
For the better part of August, frontline staff at UHN have been working under new rules. Get vaccinated or face mandatory testing 48 hours before a shift. The Ford government is now applying those same rules to the entire healthcare and education sectors. Staff will have to prove their status. The unvaccinated will have to undergo regular testing. At UHN, the policy paid off, boosting vaccination rates from 85% to 92%.
Is that enough for us, right? Is it still okay to have 8% of people not vaccinated at UHN, or do we need to be one of those environments that says because of risk, we need to go further?
The hospital network is now considering a major shift in strategy. The 950 unvaccinated employees may be asked to work from home, forced to take a leave of absence, or even lose their jobs.
That at times will require us to make very difficult decisions, but always in the best interests of patients.
Meanwhile, education workers say the Ford government missed the mark on its vaccination policy. The Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, a union representing 83,000 education workers, voted in favor of mandatory vaccinations.
The plans of the Ford government didn't go far enough in regards to the measures that need to be put in place. They've left it for individual boards to look at those issues, and that's unfortunate.
While Premier Doug Ford has repeatedly rejected the idea of mandatory vaccines for healthcare and education workers, the Progressive Conservative Party seems to have a different set of rules for its own members. The government is threatening to eject two Progressive Conservative MPPs who have yet to be vaccinated, giving them until Thursday at 5 p.m. to prove that they've had a shot.
This was the right thing to do. Require those MPPs in the Conservative caucus to get their vaccinations, absolutely. But we still have some work to do around education workers and healthcare workers who also should be mandated to have their vaccines.
PC party insiders say the Premier's office initially called MPPs, asking them not to disclose their vaccine status to journalists. So those two PC MPPs now have less than 24 hours to get their shot and send the party proof of vaccination. Those close to them suggest that's not going to happen. Those two MPPs have not identified themselves publicly and have not responded to multiple calls from CTV News. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Colin. If you see the word invoice, chances are you might think you owe someone money. And that's why this letter from the Progressive Conservatives is attracting controversy tonight. The fundraising document now at the center of calls for an investigation. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more on this. And Natalie, it remains unclear just how many people received this letter.
That's right, Michelle. And certainly some people who discovered it in their mailbox say they had donated to the PCs in the past. But even some people who support the party say they were confused and upset when they received what appeared to be a hefty invoice.
The letter is entitled Invoice and indicates a balance due to the recipient, $800 on this document, an appeal for donations to the Ontario PC Party that critics call misleading at best.
And it seems like a mail scam. You know, it seems like one of those mail-out scams where particularly seniors get get roped into, you know, buying things that they don't need or sending money that's not legitimate.
The Ontario NDP has written to Elections Ontario to ask whether the mail-out has violated any elections laws. The Liberals, too, say they will be formally requesting an investigation by Elections Ontario, the OPP, and the Canadian Anti-Fraud Centre, calling the letter a fake invoice and a scam.
It really is a very shady and shameful practice on behalf of the Ontario PC Party. You can well imagine vulnerable Ontarians receiving an invoice that asks for payment today and being duped.
There was swift anger on Twitter among some. This Ontarian writing, they're just hoping that lots of unsuspecting people, particularly the elderly, will get scared and pay these invoices.
When I opened it up, I thought, oh my gosh, why do I owe money to the PC Party? I thought that I owed money, to be honest with you. I thought I owed money.
I just think there's some really serious ethical issues with this strategy.
York University poli-sci professor Dennis Pilon says the party risks losing supporters over the move.
This is the kind of thing that will rankle someone. And again, I don't understand the thinking behind it because people don't like getting bills. You think conservatives more than anyone else would understand that.
The return address for the letter lists the Ontario PC Party fundraising office at 90 Eglinton Avenue West. The sign there indicates the office of iMarketing Solutions Group. And CTV News has reached out to the Ontario PC Party for an explanation, but has yet to receive a response. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Back to you.
Thank you, Natalie. Meanwhile, we're getting a better sense of what voting will look like in September's federal election, the move to more mail-in ballots, and how long it could take to find out the final results. It is another glimpse of what life will be like inside Toronto schools.
The CDSB outlining more of its plans for next month as families and educators prepare for a return to class. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, the measures cover everything from lunch and recess breaks to assemblies and music classes. The school board says it's an extension of what was in place last school year, and many of these protocols are stricter than the guidelines recently announced by the province.
Erin Dyle and her two sons are starting their back-to-school shopping, but have mixed feelings about returning to the classroom in September.
I'm finally going to be in class. You know, it's a different feeling waking up in the morning and sitting in a chair all day looking at a screen.
For me, I think it's important that everybody's vaccinated, everybody that can be vaccinated, and knowing that they're going to school with other kids who may not be is, I think, sort of what makes me the most nervous.
The Toronto District School Board releasing new COVID-19 health and safety protocols, many stricter than what the province has recommended, including masks must be worn by all students from JK to grade 12. Elementary students will continue to eat lunch in their classrooms, even though the province is allowing cafeterias to be used again, and they will remain in cohorts for recess and outdoor breaks. Despite being allowed by the province, there will be no indoor assemblies, virtual instead, but outdoor assemblies will be allowed with physical distancing and cohorts. And singing will be allowed indoors as long as students are wearing masks.
Just recognizes the fact that we are in Toronto, which has been a hotspot for COVID.
These protocols come as the TDSB expects 86% of its students to return for in-person learning. The added measures welcomed by teachers.
I think the masking is definitely a positive step towards keeping everybody safe and cohorting as well.
Precautions health experts say are necessary amid the fourth wave.
All of that seems to reduce the risk of spread, especially with the Delta variant. We don't know what's going to happen.
But many protocols haven't been finalized, including lunch procedures for high school students, musical instruments, physical education, high contact sports, and extracurricular activities, all given the green light by the province.
What we want to do is work with our operational guidelines team and determine if they're continuing as is.
I think my concern is indoors mostly, so I think any of the outdoor activities, any outdoor sports are safe.
The school board hopes to have the protocols finalized as soon as possible.
The school board says the measures will also include HEPA air filters in every occupied space. Parents will have one more opportunity to switch between in-person and virtual learning. That will be in February. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. Meanwhile, more school-aged children are now eligible to get their COVID-19 vaccine.
Those born in 2009 able to book their shot, and demand is already high. CTV's John Musselman is live outside one mass vaccination site with more on this. John.
Hi, Michelle. Yes, we're at the Congress Center in Etobicoke. Families have been arriving all day long here, and they're expressing a sense of relief that they can get these 2009 born children vaccinated.
Michael Rush admits he was a little anxious getting his vaccine shot today.
Terrifying.
Still, the grade 7 student feels a sense of relief knowing he will be better protected against COVID-19.
And it's probably going to help in school a lot. Because then I'll be more focused on my work than getting the vaccine.
His mother says she's relieved.
I took it, so I might as well. We all had vaccines prior to going into school in our younger days, so might as well. Better safe than sorry, right?
Today is the first day children born in 2009 are eligible to receive the Pfizer vaccine. It means many 11-year-olds are able to get the shot. Staff at the Congress Center Mass Vaccination Clinic welcomed parents and their kids arriving today.
I think it's a great idea as long as, it's safe for everyone. And I think the faster we get the children vaccinated, the safer we'll be going back to school.
Well, it's a great opportunity for her to have the vaccine. So first thing to be safe when she goes to school.
I'm going to be safe and I get to be with my friends more.
The provincial government says it has closely monitored data from British Columbia and Alberta. Both have offered the vaccine to youth born in 2009 for the past few months with no risks identified.
I think they should let all the kids get vaccinated. I think it's more safer for them and also taking it home to their parents and grandparents as well.
Toronto Mayor John Tory supports the expanded eligibility to all youth turning 12 this year. Quote, the city's vaccination clinics and our pop-up partners are ready and waiting to vaccinate this new group immediately so they can head back to the classroom with as much protection as possible against COVID-19.
And the clinic here is open until 7 o'clock tonight. It will reopen again tomorrow at 11 a.m. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. When it comes to new cases of COVID-19, Ontario is seeing an increase from yesterday. Public Health Ontario logging 485 new cases, up from 348 on Tuesday. 309 of the latest cases are among unvaccinated people. The figures are the result of more than 26,000 processed tests, putting the positivity rate at 2.5%.
345 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to more than 543,000. Three more deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,431 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 108 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 59 in Peel Region. Hamilton has 36 new cases, with 22 in York Region and 16 in both Durham and Halton. Niagara Region logged 6 new cases.
To the forecast, cloudy, humid, and hot. Michelle Jobin is here with a look at the current conditions. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Nathan. Well, we are looking at some pretty active weather that started to develop in parts of southwestern Ontario. And yes, the humidity, the building heat, and the overall instability that we're experiencing is feeding that. So we've seen quite active weather in the Niagara region where there's heavier rainfall. And more recently, down towards Kitchener, London, down towards Port Stanley, quite especially, and over towards the Stratford area, where we could see some thunderstorms that have the potential for producing some weak funnel clouds. So be aware from that. No thunder nor tornado warnings in effect or thunderstorm warnings at this point. But we will keep you posted on that and do stay tuned for that information. Temperatures have been around the mid-20s today, feeling into the mid-30s with the Humidex. As we get into tomorrow, temperatures are on the up. Right now we're sitting at 28 at Pearson. Tomorrow we're looking at a high of 30. I'll have more details on your forecast coming up.
Thanks, Michelle. Turning now to the federal election campaign, and Canada's chief electoral officer says the final result will not be known on the night of the vote.
The count of mail-in ballots will start after Election Day, once all the mail-in ballots that electors have dropped off at polling stations have been returned and integrity checks have been performed.
Those checks will make sure nobody voted in person in addition to mailing in a ballot. Stéphane Perrault says any attempts at double voting will be referred to the Elections Commissioner for investigation.
Justin Trudeau and Jagmeet Singh were out in British Columbia today making their pitches to voters.
Aaron O'Toole brought his campaign to Quebec with wind in his sails after a big win for the Progressive Conservatives in Nova Scotia. CTV's Heather Butts reports.
As more than 260 wildfires burn across British Columbia, Justin Trudeau is promising help for future fire seasons. Campaigning in Vancouver, Trudeau was pledging $500 million to purchase new equipment to fight wildfires and train 1,000 new community-based firefighters.
We will roll out
an ambitious new plan so you can protect your home from extreme weather events. This includes an expanded home retrofit program that will help you afford everything from fire-resistant shingles to better waterproofing for your basement.
Also on tour in BC, Jagmeet Singh used the province's hot housing market to highlight the NDP's plan to build 500,000 affordable homes over the next 10 years.
People that are looking to buy a home are having to compete with people who are using the housing market as like a stock market.
To reinforce his message, Singh sat down with a young couple feeling stranded among soaring real estate.
Financially, it's just not a reasonable conversation for us to have right now.
The Conservative leader spent the day in Quebec City touting a plan to punish ethical violations by politicians. Aaron O'Toole says his party's Anti-Corruption Act would prevent cover-ups and ensure lobbying is regulated, increasing fines for violations from $500 to $50,000.
We will require all meetings to be reported so corporations and organizations can't fly under the radar.
Aaron O'Toole is feeling momentum as Nova Scotia's PC leader Tim Houston surged to a surprising majority win last night, defeating the incumbent Liberals.
We are different parties, but we have shared values in many areas and shared volunteers. And so it was a great night for Nova Scotia.
All three leaders were campaigning in parts of the country where they hope to make gains. Tonight, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh will move on to Edmonton. Alberta is a Conservative stronghold. The NDP took just one seat in the last election. The Liberals were shut out. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
Federal Green Party leader Annamie Paul talked social policy in Moss Park today, highlighting her support for an idea that's gained steam in Canada and other countries.
There is no patchwork system that will ever replace a guaranteed livable income. And as we exit emergency benefits, this is part of the solution.
Paul also highlighted policies on affordable housing and homelessness and plans to reform the long-term care system.
The former head of Canada's vaccine rollout has been formally charged with sexual assault.
Major General Danny Fortin spoke publicly today for the first time since he was fired in May in connection with an allegation dating back decades. CTV's Kevin Gallagher has more.
Alongside his wife and lawyer, Major General Danny Fortin entered the Gatineau police station in full uniform to face criminal charges.
His arrest warrant was a total surprise.
Fortin is charged with one count of sexual assault dating back to some time between January 1st and April 30th, 1988. At the time of the alleged incident, the Major General would have been a 19-year-old cadet at the Royal Military College in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, Quebec. According to the arrest warrant, the assault took place off campus. Fortin denies wrongdoing.
For the past 3 months, my family and I have been living this nightmare of not knowing. Not knowing the nature of the allegation, not knowing the status of the investigation, not knowing whether or not I'd be charged.
The 36-year veteran was in charge of logistics to bring millions of doses of COVID-19 vaccines to Canada. Fortin is currently fighting the federal government in court, arguing his termination in May lacked due process.
The decision to remove me was a result of a political calculus. I just want to get back to work.
The Prime Minister and Defense Minister were aware of an investigation into Fortin weeks before he was fired. It came as several other high-ranking military members were facing allegations of sexual misconduct, a crisis that has resurfaced during the campaign.
The Canadian Armed Forces has not been to the level it needs to be to protect all women and men who choose to serve.
We have to make sure that women can serve their country with respect and free of harassment.
Women have raised serious concerns that have been completely ignored by the highest office of this land.
Danny Fortin's first court appearance is scheduled for September 20th, the same day as the federal election. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
The Taliban are consolidating their grip on Afghanistan. The militant group shared a video believed to show their political leader arriving in Kandahar. This video appears to show Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar being escorted off his plane. He'd been living in Qatar, where the Taliban maintain a political office. The Taliban said today Afghanistan will no longer be a democracy and instead will be ruled under Islamic law. Still, there was a stunning show of defiance against the militant group today.
Dozens gathered in the eastern city of Jalalabad and lowered the Taliban flag in favor of the Afghan national flag one day before the country's Independence Day. At least one person was killed when Taliban fighters attacked the crowd. Meanwhile, the government of the United Arab Emirates says Afghanistan's now former president, Ashraf Ghani, is in that country after fleeing Kabul on Sunday. U.S. officials say they had no indication the government would collapse so quickly, but 4,500 military personnel are in place in the capital as they try to get more Americans and Afghan helpers out. Elsewhere, the rush to bring help to earthquake-stricken Haiti is ramping up.
And that includes work underway here in the GTA. CTV's Zoraida Allman joins us live with more. Zoraida.
Nathan and Michelle, the situation is desperate in Haiti, and so is the race to get much-needed emergency supplies to thousands in need of shelter, medical, and food aid. Toronto-based Global Medic is no stranger to disaster relief, and they are stepping up once again. At the Global Medic headquarters in Etobicoke, volunteers are busy packing emergency food kits and family emergency kits to be shipped thousands of kilometers away to Haiti.
Lots of folks in Haiti need our help, and we've got to help.
And Global Medic is moving fast to get these much-needed emergency kits into the supply chain.
We've got tens of thousands of people that have lost their homes. They're sleeping out at night in front of the remnants of their homes. We've got to get them things like clean drinking water, food, shelter.
The 7.2 magnitude earthquake over the weekend destroyed homes and critical infrastructure, leaving tens of thousands of people homeless, the death toll at more than 1,000. As international aid arrives, the country's honorary consul says Global Medic's contribution is important.
It shows a level of solidarity, I would say international solidarity, because Global Medic has been involved with disaster relief all over the world.
Toronto Mayor John Tory encouraging Canadians to do what they can to help.
We should have more of a context within which we view our obligation as human beings to help Haitians who are in trouble. And thousands of them are homeless and thousands of them are struggling right now in the aftermath of this earthquake.
Global Medic grateful for volunteers and donations as soon as possible. And local officials have put the latest death toll at 1,941. That number expected to climb as rescue crews reach villages in remote areas. More than 10,000 people were injured. UNICEF says it estimates 1.2 million people, including 540,000 children, have been affected by the earthquake. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. While the U.S. tries to get more first and second doses of COVID vaccine into arms, the country is moving forward with booster shots.
It will make you safer and for longer. And it will help us end the pandemic faster.
Americans will be eligible for a third dose of mRNA vaccine 8 months after their second shots. U.S. President Joe Biden rejected criticism that booster campaigns should wait until more countries have higher coverage rates. He said the U.S. can protect itself and help the world at the same time.
Back here at home, is it an indication of new housing priorities?
Demand for certain rentals is up, and so are prices. CTV's Beth McTinnell reports.
Mark Owen is 30 years old, works full-time. He pays $1,650 a month plus hydro in Roncesvalles and wants to move.
I'm looking for something that's cheaper, better, and not a basement apartment.
Ev Dutille starts her master's in September. She says the search for a place was tough, but managed to secure a one-bedroom in the core for $1,700.
Well, it's too much. It's ridiculous. But if you don't have parents that can financially help you or bursaries from the government or something, it's definitely a lot harder.
Data from rentals.ca shows rents for condos and apartments are virtually back to pre-pandemic levels. Take a look at the different colored lines on the far left and far right. This shift in Toronto suggests the crunch to find a rental apartment, especially in the downtown core, at pre-COVID rates or the same level, is getting tighter and may even be over.
Rents are going to continue to go up.
The rental website found one-bedroom rents increased from June to July 1%, up 4.2% for a two-bedroom. The average monthly rent, more than $1,800 for a one-bedroom, more than $2,600 for a two-bedroom.
Mainly in the downtown, it's more for luxury units.
and bigger units. Restaurants are opening up. Venues are opening up. The Blue Jays are in town.
This professor studying the pandemic economy says housing challenges will continue for people entering the workforce.
You know, especially when you look at the GTN, look at some of the increase in unaffordability. And you're not just seeing that, you know, in major centers like Toronto, you're also seeing in smaller cities like Hamilton.
This international student was warned about rising rents. He got a two-bedroom unit near Yonge and Wellesley in May at a discount, $2,300 instead of $3,000 a month.
I get a good deal because of I move early, and so it helped me a lot.
A downtown deal disappearing in a changing rental market. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Masai Ujiri says he's home. The man at the top of the Raptors organization says he's focused on success.
The team's vice chairman and president speaking out for the first time since his decision to stay in Toronto. CTV's Austin Delaney is live tonight with more. Austin.
Yeah, this is the first time he talked to reporters today since re-signing with the team, a team he says will play right here at Scotiabank Arena when the season starts this year.
With his wife and two of his children joining him and holding a new title of vice chairman and president of the Toronto Raptors, Masai Ujiri's first order of business was heaping praise on now former Raptor Kyle Lowry.
We can't wait to have him back when we play them. Yes, we compete in this business. Kyle is part of this family and he'll be part of this family forever. You know, like, and I know people ask, I know Larry has already mentioned his jersey. He is going to get all of everything and some. You know, is Kyle the greatest Raptor that ever played the game here? Yes, he is.
And Ujiri promises the game is going to be played here at Scotiabank Arena when the season kicks off after a year and a half away from home.
We feel comfortable with it. I know the NBA schedule is coming out in a couple of days here. I know parts of it has come out already. I know that schedule says Toronto.
The Raptors called Tampa home during COVID, but Ujiri says being away from Scotiabank Arena and the fans set the team back a couple of years.
Playing another year somewhere else will set us back 5 years. Yeah, why not trying to do that?
The Raptors won the championship in 2019, where Ujiri got into an altercation with a police officer while trying to celebrate.
I want to celebrate properly one day. When we win a championship. And I'm not taking a shot. I just want to celebrate, like, well. And it'll happen by the grace of God.
And he says the team is going to develop these young players they have now and win another championship. Here, reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Sounds good. Thank you, Austin. Later tonight, a high-tech way to honor a Toronto tradition. More on the CNE's efforts to preserve thousands of memories from decades gone by.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, credit card fraud is a huge problem, but what happens if you have fraudulent charges on your credit card bill and you're told you have to pay them? A senior citizen has been told to pay thousands of dollars in charges that he says aren't his. We investigate all of that story just ahead.
The Atlantic hurricane season continues to be a busy one. We're dealing with moisture instability from the remnants of Fred as it passes from the south of us up to the northeast. But Tropical Storm or Hurricane Grace, as it has been upgraded to today, continues to be the biggest threat to land as a Category 1 hurricane right now. It has sustained winds of 130 kilometers an hour. There are hurricane warnings in effect for parts of the Yucatan Peninsula and extending across the Gulf of Mexico. We are also looking at the possibility of 100 to 200 millimeters of rain associated with this system. And then Henri looks like it will be affecting Canada as it tracks to the north. We could see some additional rainfall from it in parts of Quebec and also the Maritimes. We'll keep you updated on that. Plus, I'll have your local forecast coming up.
Credit card fraud has always been an issue, but criminals have become even bolder during the pandemic.
It's important to check for fraudulent transactions, but what if you find some on your statement and your credit card company doesn't believe you? Pat Foran has one viewer's story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
I do, Nathan and Michelle. A senior citizen found charges on his credit card for more than $2,000 that he said weren't his. He thought when he contacted his credit card company, the matter would be resolved, but instead, he was told to pay up.
I'm refusing to pay their bill because it's not my bill. If
77-year-old Art Cram of Elmont, southwest of Ottawa, has had a Walmart credit card for many years. When he was issued a new card last December, he said he got a suspicious phone call, so he contacted Walmart and canceled the card. But on his next statement, there were two charges from an Azerbaijan travel company totaling $2,300. He told Walmart he never made the charges, but he was told he had to pay them.
Mr. Cram's never been outside of Canada. The whole idea that he would be dealing with a travel company based in Azerbaijan in the former Soviet Union is ridiculous.
Cram contacted a legal aid clinic for help, and lawyer James Caffia told Walmart Cram had no interest in traveling during a pandemic to Azerbaijan, a country facing civil unrest.
It made no sense whatsoever. It was clearly a case of fraud. He doesn't even own a computer.
Even with the clinic's help, Cram was told he still had to pay the charges, and interest keeps adding up.
I'd just like to get it cleared up. Period. That's what I like.
Walmart MasterCard is issued by Duobank, and a spokesperson told us, "We take customer concerns very seriously. We have followed the industry standard practice of investigating disputed transactions. When we explained the situation to Walmart, they agreed to take a closer look." The company then said, "Our customer was contacted and offered an appropriate resolution. Walmart agreed to reverse all charges, including interest."
On top of reducing the balance to zero, Walmart MasterCard is sending Art a $50 gift certificate for his trouble. I have to thank you, Pat, and CTV, because that clearly lit a fire under them. They got to work and they dealt with it seriously.
And it's important to watch your credit card and bank statements carefully. If you do see charges that don't belong, contact them right away and escalate matters if the charges are not removed. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
It was a natural disaster that uprooted the lives of so many families in Barrie.
And tonight we have an indication of the final price tag from last month's twister. CTV's Sean Lathong reports.
Over a month after an EF2 tornado ripped through Barrie, and today the Insurance Bureau of Canada is putting a price tag on the damage. A whopping $75 million in insurable damage. The IBC says this is only part of a trend in Canada.
From 1983 to 2000, Canadian insurers averaged about $399 million a year in weather-related losses. Now, in this past decade, that number has risen to $21 billion on average.
Gloria Haydock says extreme weather events are increasing in frequency and severity.
With climate change, severe weather has more than quadrupled over the past 15 years. The number of claims that have come in.
Back on July 15th, a number of municipalities were hit by a tornado. They include Barrie, Innisfil, Kawartha Lakes, Little Britain, Manila, Lindsay, and Lake of Bays. The result, 2,200 insurance claims. In Barrie today, cleanup and rebuild is moving forward.
Still a shock to me that this is happening. Oh my God. Every day I look out in my backyard and just realize everything is gone.
According to the IBC, 71 homes caught in the July twister are now uninhabitable, with many who can stay in their homes considering themselves lucky.
Yes, the roof is hit, and the back deck and pooling and fencing, that kind of stuff. But we've been able to be in our homes. We're very fortunate.
We're still in it. At least we're at home.
Facing a tough reality that recovery from this may be a long way off. Sean Lathong, CTV News.
What an awful situation. Michelle Jobin is with us now, and we have the potential for some showers this evening, but we're about to embark on a fabulous stretch of summer weather.
Yeah, I think we deserve it, Michelle.
We certainly do, and we are looking at an increase in sunshine and losing a lot of this cloud cover that we've been dealing with, but we are still looking at some instability as we head through the evening and the overnight, and we're seeing some of that right now in southwestern Ontario. I'll show you that just in a moment, but this is a look at our current temperatures and Humidex values right now. So we got to 28 degrees in the city of Toronto. That's at Pearson Airport. A little more cloud cover closer to the lake, so a little cooler there. But we are seeing temperatures on the uptick through the next few days. So if you like heat, if you like sunshine, but also humidity, this next few days are going to be for you. So this is what we're looking at on our radar and satellite imagery right now. And of course, weather is brought to you by Trane. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a Trane. So yes, a lot happening currently in terms of our forecast in southwestern Ontario. We see these little cells that have been popping up, heavier rainfall associated with those, some thunderstorms down towards Port Stanley, London area, extending back towards Stratford. And in fact, Environment Canada has issued a special weather advisory for this evening for parts of southwestern Ontario affected by these systems, this system right now, this general instability, saying that we have the potential for seeing some funnel cloud development. Now, we are not looking at tornado warnings at this point, but in these thunderstorms, these weaker thunderstorms, we could see some funnel cloud. So do, if you are in these areas in around Stratford, the London area down towards St. Thomas and Tillsonburg, keep that in mind and do pay attention to what's happening over the next little while. A lot of instability thanks to this system, the remnants of Tropical Depression Fred that have been moving to the south of us, but high pressure building in from the west, and we're starting to see that clearing from west to east, and that goes for tomorrow. So possible showers and storms tonight, then some clearing. We do, however, see the possibility of some showers in the forecast tomorrow, but for the most part, looking clearer. Friday, as we get into the evening, we could see some pop-up showers, but for the most part, sunshine. So overnight tonight, we're hanging on to that warmth. It's been quite warm in the overnight the last few nights. That continues tonight in Toronto with 21 degrees. We should normally be at 16 degrees overnight. So it is on the warmer side, and we'll get to there as we get into the day tomorrow. 30 degrees are projected high, feeling into the upper 30s with the humidex. UV index will be on the uptick as well in Toronto at an 8 or very high. More cloud cover to the east, so you're going to have a lower UV index there. So Thursday, chance of showers, slightly, humidex of 38, 30 degrees is your high. 30 for Friday as well, with a lot more sunshine and higher UV for the weekend. Saturday and Sunday, a pair of 29s, slight chance of showers on Sunday, and looking nice as we get into the early part of next week with a lot of sunshine on the way. That's all for now for your forecast. Stay with us. We'll have more coming up after the break.
A recent survey found nearly half of teenagers felt their mental health had deteriorated during the pandemic.
And now there are calls to make mental health education mandatory in the school curriculum. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
I think it's absolutely a wonderful place for young people to be learning about mental health.
Kathy Short from School Mental Health Ontario agrees the topic should be part of the curriculum, but she says it already is.
Mental health is woven throughout the health and physical education curriculum. And so it actually is, as you say, mandatory, or it's an expectation that it will be taught just alongside physical health.
Just this week, SMHO launched a new set of guides to teach students of various ages about the basics of mental health, how to recognize symptoms, how to help a friend, and more.
The idea is to help young people to build a toolkit of strategies that they can use at times of stress, well, not just during the pandemic. And so there are things like breathing techniques that you can use when you're feeling anxious.
There are also guides for teachers, principals, and guidance or social workers associated with schools. Just in the past couple of days, they've seen some 20,000 downloads. Short says a 2019 survey showed that 97% of students felt mental health should be taught at school, and they preferred to learn about the topic from their teachers rather than a mental health professional with whom they were not familiar. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
In New York, opening statements began today in the federal criminal trial of R&B singer R. Kelly. He faces charges of racketeering and violating an anti-sex trafficking law. Prosecutors say R. Kelly sexually and psychologically exploited children and women. Multiple accusers are expected to testify, and defense attorneys say those witnesses were fans who approached the singer themselves. R. Kelly has also pleaded not guilty to sex-related charges in Illinois and Minnesota.
If you haven't had enough of Fast and the Furious, a new report suggests you don't have to worry. Dangerous.
Maybe this is the end, but we won't go out together. No,
Deadline says Universal has set a 2023 release date for Fast and Furious 10. F9 was the highest-grossing movie during the pandemic worldwide, grossing over $860 million at the global box office. A title for the 10th installment is expected to be announced soon.
Disney Plus is sharing the trailer for a new entry in the Star Wars saga that looks very different from the ones that came before.
Its power and responsibility now lie with you.
Star Wars Visions is an upcoming anthology about the Jedi and the Force, drawn in the style of Japanese anime. Voice actors include Lucy Liu, Neil Patrick Harris, and George Takei. Star Wars Visions debuts on September 22nd.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
We would first like to work with people and better understand what their resistance is, try to overcome that resistance, get everyone vaccinated who doesn't have a medical reason not to be vaccinated.
Updating our top stories, University Health Network employees who refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine could eventually be forced to take a leave of absence or even lose their jobs.
I think it's pretty clear that the mailing is designed to make it look like the person opening the envelope owes money.
The Ontario PC Party is facing criticism for sending out a donation letter which resembles an invoice. Opposition parties are now demanding an investigation.
We work closely with Toronto Public Health, and they had advised some additional precautions that we may want to take into account at the TDSB.
And the TDSB has released its COVID-19 guidelines for students returning to class in September, with some rules going beyond provincial recommendations. The board expects 86% of students to be back in the classroom this fall. And there is a lot for families to think about tonight with those school rules and Ontario expanding vaccine eligibility to more kids.
And CB24 tonight is digging into all of it this evening. We're joined by Lena Latifat. Lena, you've been speaking with medical experts about what parents need to know.
That's right, Nathan. We are talking COVID and kids tonight. You know, school, just 3 weeks away. Parents are anxious. They have lots of questions. Will my child be safe in the classroom? What about the Delta variant? They have questions about vaccines, about the fourth wave. There's so much to get to, so we'll check in with our panel of experts.
And you'll also be taking a closer look at physician burnout.
Yeah, and you know, for months, frontline healthcare workers have been saying they feel burnt out. Now the OMA says 72% of physicians in this province have reported burnout during the pandemic. This is a very serious issue. Nurses, too, are stressed out. They're walking away from the profession. So what can be done here? We'll talk solutions. That discussion coming up on CP24 tonight.
All right. Thank you, Lena. And don't forget, CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24. From 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar slipped 18 points to close at 79.05 U.S. American benchmark oil lost $1.13 a barrel to close at 65.46. And the TSX Composite Index lost 61 points to end the day at 20,302.
Porter has become the first airline in Canada to issue a COVID-19 vaccination policy. The company resumes flights as of September 8th. When that happens, staff members will either have to be fully vaccinated or show proof of recent negative COVID-19 tests. Porter says it's taking the step after Ottawa announced the requirement for workers in federally regulated industries like airlines. Passengers traveling by air and rail will also have to be vaccinated.
Stunt driving charges in Ontario now come with a 14-day vehicle impoundment, and one motorist is learning that the hard way. A London man was pulled over in Brampton for allegedly speeding while driving a rented Lamborghini. Since he won't be able to return the car on time, Peel police say he'll be on the hook for $18,000 in rental fees. Multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has more on this story on our website. Check it out at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
After the break, racing against time to preserve more than 64,000 historical photos. The CNE's campaign to save part of its history.
Finally tonight, preserving precious summertime memories dating back decades.
While the X grounds may be silent this season, there is a race underway to protect photos of yesteryear. CTV's multimedia journalist Craig Wadman takes a look.
What we're doing is we're scanning the cellulose acetate negatives from our Alexander Studio collection here at the CNE Archives. It comprises 109,000 negatives, and all of them are suffering from vinegar syndrome. Vinegar syndrome happens when the emulsion of the negative starts to degrade and crack due to high humidity and pressure. And when that happens, little channels start forming across the image of the negative, and we end up losing the image entirely. One way that we can help the negatives is by scanning them and digitizing them. And then we package them and get them ready for long-term cold storage, which will slow down the vinegar syndrome. It won't stop it entirely, but it will slow down the degradation. We're starting in the late 1940s, when the collection starts, 1947, and we're scanning them sequentially until we reach the date 1981, which is when the collection ends. It's very important because the CNE holds so many amazing memories from all sorts of backgrounds, generations. For many Torontonians and people that live in the GTA, the CNE is a family tradition. In a lot of our negatives, we have images from the Blue Jays when they played their first ball game in 1977. We have a lot of really amazing memories captured on these negatives that we want to preserve so that people can look through them and enjoy them and reminisce about those days. We're asking the public for their help in order to help us preserve those memories.
All right, brings back memories.
Sure does, Michelle.
Yes, absolutely. And it would have been a great week for the CNE weather-wise this week because we have lots of sunshine on the way. A little on the hot side, 30 degrees tomorrow. After seeing some showers and thunderstorms, potentially tonight we'll be at 21 degrees in our overnight low, which is quite warm, but getting lots of sunshine later in the week.
Thank you. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
Good night.